Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing this morning? Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good morning. What's good about it? It's great. So it's great to see you folks up here so early, bright and bushy-tailed in the morning for our UBCM clinic. I hope you all got some breakfast if you wanted some. It's available until 8:30, so please help yourselves. To start, I'd like to acknowledge that we are conducting our business today on the traditional territory of the Musqueam First Nation and of the Coast Salish peoples. In a moment, I will invite Paul Taylor up to share some information on the UBCM 2017 Infrastructure Roadmap. As many of you know, Paul is UBCM's Director of Communications. In over 10 years with the UBCM, Paul has supported the delivery of federal gas tax funds and UBCM's advocacy efforts with regards to federal infrastructure program design. Paul lives in Victoria and is in the process of hiking every park in the capital region. Must be lots of parks with his family. So please join me in welcoming Paul Taylor.
Well, I always feel with the UBCM convention, if you want to see the cream of the crop amongst the delegates, go to a morning clinic, right? You just kind of see the folks who are keen and at it. So thank you for being the cream of the crop for this year's LGLA. Thank you for the introduction, Arjun. I've been with UBCM for 10 years now, and as I was thinking about this session today, I've been thinking about how much the picture for infrastructure funding in BC, federally supported, has changed over that 10-year period. It seems like there's been exponential growth. And in fact, I went back to the federal budget from 2006, when I was first hired, and between then and now, there's been a 4 times increase in the amount of infrastructure. If we could just get the PowerPoint presentation on. There we go. Awesome. So there's been a big change. There's a lot more federal money that is out there, and that's a good thing. Some of that is specifically targeted for local government assets. Other things are flowing to provincial priorities. But generally, we're in a situation where there is much more funds available to communities. But along with that, there's a whole lot more complexity. We have now literally layers of infrastructure funding that has flown through successive governments, going back to Paul Martin's government, the Mulroney governments, and now the Trudeau governments. And as all those programs are kind of layered, one upon the other, it can be a challenge to kind of disentangle them and to know what's what. So my goal today is to try to disentangle things somewhat with you and to kind of share the information that is known, provide a status update on the programs that are functioning, and then perhaps most importantly, look ahead to the 2017 budget, federal budget, which is not, the date of which has not been set, but we can anticipate that it's going to come sometime in March. There will be huge commitments of funding that will be made in that budget, and hopefully today's presentation will be a little bit like the program at the hockey game. You'll know the players' names, and you know to watch for when you're watching the game. There's handouts on every table, and I think we've probably got enough for everyone today. I would say, as we go along, there's a fair bit of information. Don't save your questions to the end. If you have a question, just shoot up your hand. Or even if you're feeling bored and just want to talk for a while, just put your hand up and let me know. To start with, I want to talk just a little bit about UBCM's role as an administrator of infrastructure funding, and then our role as advocate. They're dual roles, and they support and reinforce each other. We really started to build capacity as an administrator of funding after the wildfires early in the 2000s, the Filmon report, which called for a whole number of things, including providing greater resources to local government for emergency management, planning, wildfire. And the provincial government at the time came to UBCM and said, can you help deliver these funds? We need to do this quickly. It needs to go to your members. Can you do that? UBCM said yes. So in 2004, we began to ramp up the side of our organization that administers those funds. All these years later, there's still a wildfire program, other programs as well that are provincially supported. We have two full-time staff that administer those programs. Shortly after that, in 2005, UBCM was invited again by the province to take on a role as the administrator of the new federal gas tax fund. And because of the long-term nature of that fund and the significant amount of money involved, that had a big impact on the organization in terms of capacity. We went outside ourselves at the time. We went and actually found excellence in the provincial government. Brenda Gibson was hired to come in and help launch the program, and she stayed with UBCM for 10 years. What that meant is not only did we have excellence in terms of administration, but excellence also when it came time for advocacy. And when you look at the list there, over the years there have been a number of windows of opportunity for local governments to speak up as federal governments were changing, implementing, and bringing new programs online. Think back to the big economic downturn after 2007, 2008, stimulus funds, small community funds. UBCM had a critical role at that time to get those flowing and provincially supported and flowing to local government. Similarly, as the Harper government developed its long-term infrastructure plan, the gas tax fund was eventually redesigned. At points all along the way, UBCM has been involved coordinating messages, messaging with FCM as well, to deliver feedback based on positions that have been either kind of gleaned from local government through surveying or the resolutions process where you've kind of endorsed positions on how you would like to see infrastructure programming develop in advance. So the two functions really kind of go hand in hand, and when you look back now, you know, we're well into a decade of having this, I would say, strength and capacity within the organization. If you kind of look at the things that UBCM has advocated for based on what we've heard from local government over the years, you kind of maybe boil it down into 4 points. First of all, we've consistently said programs need to focus on local government assets. Local governments manage, by most estimates, nearly 60% of all the infrastructure in Canada. We've always felt that in terms of fairness, there should be a corresponding allocation of federal funds on par with the amount of infrastructure that local governments manage and the services that we deliver. Secondly, there's a great need for flexibility in programs. And then you can see that over time, where programs like the Gas Tax Fund have seen the eligibility criteria for the types of projects that can be undertaken broaden. The reason for that, of course, is the infrastructure in an electoral area is quite different from the infrastructure in a town of 50,000, and the needs that are unique to Zabelis are quite different from the needs of Richmond or Vancouver. And so flexibility in program design is key. Obviously, another key factor is a long-term commitment that's providing predictable funding to communities. Everyone can relate to the rigmarole that can be attached with chasing grant money. And as often as it is a wonderful thing for communities, it can also be a source of frustration as well in terms of the time and resources that staff have to allocate in order to develop grants and applications that are successful. And there can be some uncertainty with that. Programs that are longer term take some of that uncertainty out and strengthen local government planning. A final point that we've argued for and are advocated for is transparency in governance, fair and equitable governance. Programs should have clear goals and objectives. There should be clear decision-making processes. You should be able to see how decisions are being made and how funding is being allocated. As we go through some of the programs today, you'll see some programs that really kind of hit all those sort of principles that we've spoken of, other programs less so. Information today, as I said, is going to focus on the federal side of things. There are lots of provincial programs as well, given the time available. I didn't want to go into those. And also because there are more kind of unknowns and the federal programs are more of a moving target, I thought our time would be best spent just focusing on those. Information is gleaned going back to the economic action plan of the Harper government's successive federal budgets. Last fall's economic statement, which came in November, kind of came quietly and out of the blue, actually had a lot of significant information in terms of new commitments the federal government was making, so we'll spend some time on that today. And of course, all of that is looking forward to the federal budget 2017. It's anticipated this next budget will be making funding commitments of up to $186 billion over the next 11 years for infrastructure. To just put that into perspective, over 11 years, the Federal Gas Tax Fund, which is a major infrastructure program, its total commitment would be in the area of 21, 22, maybe 23 billion. So 186 billion gives you an idea of the kind of scale that we're looking at this next stage. It's a bit of a chart. This comes from the fall economic statement. Just to, again, you can kind of see how this ramping up is taking place. This chart goes kind of spanned 17 years, going back to 2011, just as the kind of stimulus funding and additional small communities funding was winding down. And you can see the big jump from last year as phase one of the new infrastructure plan begins to kick in. So that's the bar that runs over 5 years in red. But when you look at the band above that, at the buff zone, shows you the new funding that's going to be coming on stream. That's the funding that we're going to be finding out about in budget, the 2017 federal budget. This will be the only use of Latin in the presentation today. You may have looked at some of the old explorers' maps. It always amazes me how they headed out, kind of knowing a little bit about what the world looked like, but knowing there's a whole bunch of the world they knew nothing about. Well, right now, the picture for infrastructure, federal infrastructure in Canada, is a lot like that. There's some pieces that we know, and then there's a whole bunch of pieces where we just don't know anything. We know there's something there, but we don't know the details of it. And speaking with provincial colleagues, they're kind of in the same boat as well. We're all in it together, and it's why the 2017 federal budget will be kind of closely attended to. We're gonna get more details. It's gonna fill in the map a little bit more. So, kind of to start with, we're going to walk through a whole series of programs. It's kind of detail-y. Please ask questions or comments, and we'll start walking our way along. So let's go back to the Economic Action Plan. Part of that was Building Canada Fund, and within that, the Small Communities component. This program has broad local government eligibility. I'll use that term throughout the presentation today. It's kind of a generally accepted list of projects that you see across a whole number of different types of federal programs. The gas tax fund is pretty similar to small communities, which means communities can do things like brownfield redevelopment, broadband, disaster mitigation, drinking water system upgrades, green energy, roads, public transit. You get the picture. It's quite a comprehensive list of things related to local government assets. This is a program provides funds to communities with populations under 100,000, so it's not inclusive when you think about local governments, of course, in BC. And first intake has been completed, and we're now at the stage where the second intake has been completed, and probably within the next month, there will be news on which communities were successful in receiving funding. So keep watch. With those announcements, again, which are anticipated in March, it's likely that all of the funding for this program will be completed. It'll be interesting then to see if funding is renewed going ahead for future years in federal budgets. Also part of the Economic Action Plan, Building Canada Fund, was a program for provincial and, it was called the Provincial and Territorial Infrastructure Component, also national and regional projects if you're at a federal level. So again, there was broad eligibility under this program, and both the province and local governments were eligible recipients of these funds. Very significant chunk of money, $982 million federally available to projects in BC. A big chunk of that has already been committed, $682 million. So there's another $300 million out there. We anticipate that likely over the course of this year, those projects will be identified. This program has run quite differently from other programs. There really hasn't been a clear application process. One community that received funding, I gave them a call one time to say, I'd be curious to know, how was it that you received these funds? Did you make an application? And their response was, we just got a call one day from the ministry. They knew that we had an interest in this project, and it aligned with their priorities. And so that's how that went ahead. In terms of transparency then, governance, a lot of the things that we would value as priorities, this program has not been very strong. It'll be interesting to see what the priorities will be as these future announcements roll out. Thus far, it's been primarily highways. It's kind of been a big focus. Gas tax fund, of course, is administered by UBCM. Thought we should include it here because it is part of the overall picture. It's 100% federally funded. And over the, we're currently in a five-year agreement. It's going to deliver $1.3 billion to BC communities during that period. Won't go into all the details. You're quite familiar with this program. We'll say we've had one intake for strategic priorities funding. A second intake, or call for applications, is likely this year. So there'll be another opportunity to enter into the seeking pooled funding under this program. So now we start to move into the new funding that is flowing from the through the current government. Public Transit Infrastructure Fund is definitely one of the bigger ones. Phase one funding has already begun to roll out. Matter of fact, when I took the Canada Line over here today, TransLink was promoting the benefits of the funding that it's receiving through this program and some of its advertising on the trains. UBSIM had a strong advocacy focus on the rollout of phase one funding. It was part of our advocacy days outreach last year when we were visiting in the legislature. Federal government took the step through phase one of providing a 50% commitment in terms of its share of funding. UBSIM was advocating that the provincial government maintain a 33% share at a minimum, so that local governments would have a corresponding 17% share. We heard at convention last year that the provincial government committed to doing that. And so that will be one of the things that we'll be watching for phase two. Will the federal government maintain its 50% share? And then if so, we'll be following up the province to make sure it maintains its 33% share. You look at the amount of funding that's going to be available there over an 11-year period. That $25.3 billion figure, though, of course, is a national figure. So that's for all the provinces and territories. BC's portion of that, of course, will be reduced on a per capita basis. But still, it's a very significant chunk of money. It's like adding a second gas tax fund on top of the existing gas tax fund. Another program which has already begun to roll out is the Clean Water and Wastewater Fund. So communities can use this for water, wastewater, and stormwater projects. Primary recipient is local government. Again, phase one funding, 50% federal, 33% provincial. This is like a bread and butter infrastructure program that really addresses the needs of local government communities. Maybe I'll stop right now. You got a question?
It's working? Maybe it's not. Oh, there we go. I figured this would be a good time for this question. Ron Hovannis, Mayor, Town of Oliver.
Thank you for identifying yourself.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation. We have a real need in our community right now. We're the water purveyors for both domestic water and agricultural water, and we've identified a $10.4 million fix for our agricultural water system. We had a huge breach. We had our canal, which was damaged by a rock bluff where a huge rock came down, smashed our canal. We have a temporary fix, and now we've identified this $10 million fix. We're having a hard time. We're just starting right now. We just have made this decision on Monday to go with this option, this fix, because we had four options. But finding support for agriculture water. So we know there's tons of money out there for wastewater and domestic water, but can you give me any direction or any support? We're already working with the province and the feds to try to identify something, but do you know, is there going to be, or can you see, when we talk about flexibility, and do you see anywhere down the road support for agriculture water?
It's not something that has kind of risen up as a priority amongst program design. One of the ways in which communities that are kind of dealing with that issue, and I know Oliver is one of them, that has taken steps to, at very least, make sure that treated drinking water isn't being used as agricultural water. So redeveloping systems so that at least there is kind of clear diversion going on. It seems to me Fort St. John had a project like that as well, and I believe they used gas tax funds to kind of make that separation. So there are ways to do drinking water projects that are focused on delivering drinking water to households that may help, but you're really getting into the gritty details there of a specific project.
Right.
Yeah. So, but the short answer to your question, I think, is no. Not that I'm aware of. I'm not seeing anything looking ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions before we carry on? So as you can see, there was an initial announcement under phase one of this program. It's just a small portion of the overall funding. So there's likely another $300 million in announcements, And again, we're anticipating those announcements to come fairly soon. Looking ahead, phase two, so this is where things begin to get kind of complicated as you're looking at the federal material. This program is funded through a larger stream called the Green Infrastructure Fund or program. And information on that was provided in the fall economic statement. So the federal government's going to be providing $21 billion to the green infrastructure priorities over an 11-year period. Part of those funds will go to phase two of the Clean Water and Wastewater Fund. Part of those funds also are, though, going to be used for clean air projects. So we'll touch on that a bit. But obviously, one of the things that will be quite interesting to look for as we get into phase two is what portion of these funds are going to be going into the Clean Water and Wastewater Fund, and then how much of that is going to flow through to BC. Yes, this microphone.
Thank you very much. I'm Joyce Spence, and I'm a councillor at North Couch, a municipality between Nanaimo and Victoria. And with regard to the phase two green infrastructure, mentioning the water, wastewater, stormwater, and you were just saying air, my question would be, is there anything in these programs funding-wise for solid waste?
Well, solid waste, certainly going back to the gas tax fund. Gas tax funds are going to be eligible, are always eligible for that.
So it's not incorporated into the green infrastructure per se?
We'll have to watch.
Okay.
It'll be something to look for.
Thank you.
My hunch is no.
Okay.
But keep an eye on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Maybe we'll move along just to the next one. In any case, so currently there's funds available related to climate change, adaptation, and mitigation. This also is part of the phase one funding. And further details of that was provided in the fall economic statement. It's a rather small chunk of money, $518 million over 5 years, that's been committed. And a big chunk of that was to go to research. $40 million was set aside for revised national building codes by 2020 for residential, institutional, commercial, and industrial facilities. FCM also received a chunk of that $518 million. It's a $75 million program, and if the media advisories I've seen are right, there's probably going to be information from FCM on the rollout of that funding later today. So kind of keep watch. If you're on social media or watching the news, there may be more information coming on that program. So phase two of funding for climate change, adaptation, and mitigation will also be coming through the Green Infrastructure Program. In the fall economic statement, they kind of gave a list of what are some of the project types that might be funded, and I thought it would be just interesting just to read that out so you can get a sense of the kind of scope of what they're looking at here. Include things like interprovincial transmission lines that reduce reliance on coal, development of new low-carbon renewable power projects, the expansion of smart grids to make more efficient use of existing power supplies, construction of infrastructure to help manage the risk associated with floods and wildfires. So when I hear that, I'm hearing lots of things that aren't necessarily local government assets, and some things that are. So again, it'll be interesting to look at the eligibility criteria for the types of projects that will be funded for the clean air portion of the Green Infrastructure Program. Another significant chunk coming up in the federal budget is related to social infrastructure. And again, kind of like the green infrastructure, this is a catch-all program that includes a whole number of things within it. Affordable housing and homelessness, childcare, and recreation facilities. So this is a really broad class of social infrastructure. Certainly, all of it is of interest to local government. In many cases, these are assets, though, that are likely not owned by local government, but which local government would be supportive of. There was a lot of work done by the federal government consulting around a national housing strategy. UBCM fed into that process through the fall of 2016. This program is going to be used to fund the national housing strategy. So some of the findings of that were released by the federal government back in November. And again, this will be an area in the 2017 budget that will be closely watched to see how those funding dollars for affordable housing, homelessness, supportive housing, how that will roll out to the provinces and to the territories. Again, this is a really massive amount of funding on a national level. Again, it's sort of like adding a second gas tax, or a third gas tax fund, really, on top of the existing one that we have. As we go farther along through the presentation, we get further and further into terra incognita. We really don't know very much about the rural and northern communities program. Typically over the years in federal programs, when they make reference to northern communities, we're talking about territorial communities. It's interesting that this one uses the word rural in addition to that. I've made some calls to Infrastructure Canada, to staff, to say, even in terms of the definition of the terms that are used here, are you thinking kind of broadly inclusive by the use of rural? Would it be like targeted perhaps to very, very small communities? And quite literally, no one at the level that UBCM would deal with has an answer to that question yet. So this will be one to watch. It's not a huge amount of money, but again, it'll be of interest and something we'll be watching in the federal budget. Trade and transportation, again, very little information on this program. No funding has been released. There is no program design yet. The only bit of information related to this, the government will make strategic investments in trade and transportation projects that build stronger, more efficient transportation corridors to international markets. So again, something to watch, I would think, particularly for coastal communities. Finally, we want to spend some time on the Canada Infrastructure Bank. Finance Minister Morneau kind of introduced this concept in the fall economic statement. This really is something kind of entirely new in the infrastructure scene in Canada. It will not operate like a conventional program, as far as we can tell. It's not about providing grants, but it's more focused on the financing side of things. And secondly, there's a strong incentive here or a focus on projects that will generate revenue. And so there's been a lot of work by the finance minister reaching out to big investors. One of the aims of the infrastructure bank is to draw private investment in. They're hoping for every $1 billion of public money that is put into bank, at this point there's a $35 billion commitment there, that they will draw in $5 billion for each $1 billion in private money. There's really a ferment of debate about the infrastructure bank and seemingly still debate within government, so it'll be interesting to see details related to this. One of the things, although there have been contradictory statements of the types of projects that could get funded, it would seem, particularly through Finance Minister Morneau's his comments, that the focus would be on major, major projects. Many of the projects, most of the projects that BC local governments would undertake are quite likely not to reach the threshold of eligibility for these. But that remains to be seen. And we'll be looking forward for more details in the 2017 budget. So as we go forward, we will be trying to gather information through the budget, through other means as well. When we have that, we always want to make that available to our members. We do that through the Compass. Just kind of a selfish interest on my part, I'd love a show of hands if you could tell me whether or not you receive the Compass right now. Does that come to your inbox? Actually, that's pretty good. If not, there's a portal on our website. All you have to do is plug in your email. You'll get it directly. We designed it for busy people. The idea is that you could scan the headlines in 30 seconds and say, doesn't matter. You can do that once a week, and then you're kind of, at least you've had that opportunity to be up to date. And then if you do want to dig in, click, and then lots of information from there. So that's kind of the picture of things. As you can see, lots of things we know, lots of things we don't know, lots of things to look forward to, and that's going to be a really interesting budget when we get to March. So before we wrap up, we've got a question here. Yeah.
Thank you for your presentation. Jerry Bruce from the Caribou Regional District.
Hi, Jerry.
I read with great interest your handout.
Okay.
And I can certainly see possibilities for local government, but I also see the almost with every item is additional work for somebody in the system. Most of our staffs, and I think I'm speaking for most people here, our staffs now are kind of at their maximum. Is there anywhere in this plan that I've missed that we get some additional help to build the administrative infrastructure to make this stuff work and to get the work done at the local level that goes with the capital, but it's actually operational type costs? Mm-hmm. I see a tremendous amount of work required, but I'm not sure I saw anything that would help us in our reality that our staff are now pushed to the max. Mm. How do we do what we need to do without additional funds?
Mm-hmm. I know capacity is something that the federal government thinks about in its design of the programs. I'm not aware of any funding programs, though, that would support capacity in that way. Some of these programs will provide funds actually for planning and asset management. Part of that is kind of a training component as well. So there are things that way, but I think not necessarily along the lines of, if I understood your question correctly, kind of preparing an application, selecting a project, bringing that forward.
Good morning. I'm Paul Deminock, Columbia Shuswap Regional District, Area C, the South Shuswap. Going back to the Clean Water and Wastewater Fund, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly, there was a requirement in the last window of opportunity to complete the project within 1 year. And it strikes me that for a wastewater or water type of project, that's very, very hard to do. And then on the other hand, you read of applications that are $40 million in size, and you wonder, well, how are they doing it? Mm-hmm. So I guess perhaps you could communicate back to the powers to be that operate these programs federally that there is some additional time and flexibility that's required to actually implement some of these programs, and why the rush? Why the 1 year delivery date? Mm. You know, if it's still serving a strategic purpose, that seems to be a very odd criterion to enforce.
It all comes from that whole concept of infrastructure as stimulus, right?
Right.
So the federal government has this interest of getting the money into the economy, but you may recall back the last time there was a stimulus concept around funding. The Harper government wanted funding expended in a very short time. But with the reality of construction seasons and the like, many communities did not get construction completed within the time that was proposed. And then there was a sensible extension that was offered at the end to make sure that projects were completed.
So you can sort of ignore that criterion a little bit then.
I did not say that.
Thanks.
I think so.
Okay. Let me take this opportunity to thank my friend Paul. It's a lot of stuff in these programs, and they're also critical for us, but it's relatively dry stuff to go through it. 7:15 in the morning, you did a great job, man. So let me give you this card.
Thank you very much.
Let me shake your hand.
Thanks, Sergeant.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
Let's give a round of applause for Paul, please.
Thank you.
So as some of you might know, I sit on the LGLA board as the UBCM appointee. So what I'm about to say is kind of self-serving, because I'm going to thank UBCM for their involvement in LGLA. But we have some UBCM board members who are with us today. Our president, Murray Krause, was going to be here, but he ended up having all these high-level meetings in Prince George and in Vancouver, so he's unable to be with us. But Murray has been doing great work for us as our president this year of UBCM. I see Director Art Kane from Fraser Fort George. Hi, Art. There he is. He's our electoral area representative on the UBCM board. So give Art a round of applause, please. Past President Al Richmond is here, but I think he's in the room right now. Is Al in the room? No? Okay. Are there any of the UBCM board members in the room? Okay, good. But I won't miss anybody then. I do want to just also acknowledge our executive director, Gary McIsaac, who's sitting over there. Hi, Gary. You'll see UBCM staff members Anna Maria and Raylene in the foyer helping out. Staff members Jocelyn Young and Kathleen Spellick are in attendance in our sessions today. And this is a self-serving part. From the foundation of LGLA onward, UBCM has been one of our strongest sponsors and really appreciate their ongoing support. A big thank you to UBCM. So now we have about 10 minutes to make your way to your first concurrent session of the day. You have three streams to choose from this morning. They are sort of titled Listening, Connecting, and Leading. So listening is with Robert Lubican of Aboriginal Awareness Canada. We have Connecting with Tracy Lawrenson of Paragon Strategic, and Leading with Travis Streb and John Voth of the Humphrey Group. All three sessions will be repeated at 10:30. So you'll be able to attend two of the three on offer this morning. So with that, I wish you a very, very good day, and we'll see you back at your sessions. Thank you.